Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Part 1. Family reunion. The atmosphere in the car is thick with unsaid words. The streets of New Orleans roll past, the warm glow of the midday sun punctuating the colonial architecture and lively marketplaces. It's a mild day in late January, the kind that makes you believe spring is just around the corner, even when it's months away. As a private eye, I welcome a day off like this. And no cases, no mysteries, just a simple drive to my parents' house for debt. But as every investigator knows, there's no such thing as a simple drive. The text I received earlier in the day still looms over me. We need to talk. That's all the message says. No follow-up text, no response to my requests for elaboration. Nothing good ever starts with those four words. Sitting next to me, Renee, my wife, and crime-solving partner, nervously checks herself in the sun visor mirror for what seems like the 100th time. Her brunette locks cascade down her back in soft waves, contrasting with her porcelain skin. Her gray eyes, deep and enigmatic, dart from the mirror to the scenery outside and back again. Her red lips purse in anxiety. After a decade of marriage, you'd think she'd be accustomed to these visits. Yet she looks more terrified now than she did facing the beast of the bayou last summer. "Can you give it a rest? You look fine," I snap, more harshly than I intended to. Renee's eyes lock onto mine, a tempest in her gaze. "Excuse me? You look amazing, Renee," I say sheepishly, softening my tone. Renee pulls at her dress, her eyes returning to her reflection. "Do I look fat in this?" Trying to lighten the mood, I quip. "If you were any thinner, you'd be invisible." Renee's eyes narrow. She doesn't look pleased. I immediately regret my attempt at humor. "I just want to make a good impression, you know?" she murmurs. I glance over at her, my grip tightening on the wheel. "Renee, they've seen you hundreds of times. If you hadn't made an impression by now, maybe you never will." She shoots me a glare. "You know it's not that simple. It's just, they look at me and I still feel like an outsider. You know how much I want them to like me." "They do like you. They love you," I reply. "Besides, it's just dinner." She stiffens. "It's not just dinner to me, Ash. It never has been, and you know it." Letting out a deep sigh, I can't contain my frustration. "Why does everything have to be a drama with you?" Her eyes flash with anger. "You're blaming me? Just because I care about how I'm perceived? That's not the point. This excessive self-consciousness, it's becoming a problem." I glance at her, regretting my words even before they land. Renee's eyes turn glassy, a mixture of a hurt and anger. "Excessive self-consciousness? Really, Ash? Maybe if you'd been a bit more self-conscious during that recent case, things would have turned out differently." I raise an eyebrow, struggling to keep my voice level. "You're bringing up the Daniels case? That's what this is about?" Her nostrils flare, her frustration evident. "You know it's not just about the case, but since we're on the topic, maybe if you weren't so self-absorbed in your methods, you'd have seen the signs." I scoff. "What signs? That I was following my instincts as I always do?" "Exactly," Renee exclaims, pointing a finger at me. "Your instincts. Not once did you think about how your actions could affect others. Like when you decided to break into Daniel's office without backup." I snort. "This is rich coming from you of all people, Renee," I say tersely. "Between the two of us, you've always been the reckless one. Remember the stunt you pulled last year on the Montgomery case? You almost got us both killed." Renee's voice lowers, her anger dissolving into vulnerability.
"Ash, I'm just saying. Maybe we both need to think more about consequences. About the future. About...
As the SUV pulls up to a quaint apartment complex, the vibrant figure of our secretary, Amber, appears at the door. Her eyes widen slightly at the sight of the vehicle, and she hurriedly makes her way, carrying a carefully wrapped dish. I can see something deeper in Renee's eyes, a tremble in her voice, something she's hesitating to say. But my own frustration blinds me to her subtle attempt to change the conversation's direction. The apartment complex looms larger as we pull into the parking lot, and the sight of Amber hurrying towards us distracts me further.
Can we please talk about this later?
I beg her, not wanting to cause a scene. Her mouth tightens, and she gives a small, reluctant nod, looking down at her lap.
Fine,
she whispers, the unspoken words hanging heavy in the air between us.
Hey, y'all,
she greets cheerily as she gets in, unaware of the stormy atmosphere in the front.
Thanks again for inviting me. I'm so excited.
As she settles into the seat, she can't help but notice the icy silence.
Everything okay?
She asks, her voice hesitant. Renee and I trip over each other to respond.
Everything's fine,
I say.
Absolutely,
Renee adds, her tone just a tad too sweet. Amber raises an eyebrow, but decides not to push further.
So,
she begins, trying to change the topic.
Tet is like Vietnamese Thanksgiving, right? Because I brought casserole.
Renee laughs softly.
Not exactly, Cher. It's more like New Year's. It's a time for family and to celebrate fresh starts.
Seeing an opportunity to lighten the mood, I chime in with a smirk.
You know, our previous secretary made the same mistake. Brought a turkey and everything. We never saw her again after that Tet dinner. What was her name? Gail? It's still our most mysterious cold case.
Amber's face pales, but before she could react, Renee rolls her eyes and playfully swats at me.
Don't listen to him. He's just messing with you. Gail moved to California to be closer to her grandkids.
I could see the relief wash over Amber's face. Renee smiles at her.
If it puts your mind at ease, I made a traditional Cajun Mardi Gras dish. Chicken and sausage gumbo. It's a bit spicy, but I think everyone will love it.
Amber's eyes light up.
That sounds amazing.
Renee grins, then turns her attention back to me.
Ash, did you remember to bring the lisi from Theo and Mia?
Amber, looking confused, chimes in.
Lisi? What's that?
Renee explains.
It's a Tet tradition. Elders give red envelopes with money inside to younger family members. It's meant to bring luck and prosperity for the new year.
Amber nods, understanding.
Oh, so like a New Year's present.
Renee nods, then eyes me with a pointed look.
So, Ash, did you put in $50 for each of them?
I sighed, rubbing my temples.
Yes, I did.
She gives me an approving smile.
Great. I just want to be a good aunt, you know? They're growing up so fast.
Amber catches on to the tension, and with a puzzled expression, she looks from me to Renee.
$50 seems generous.
I mumble. I wanted to give them 20 each, but some people believe in spoiling them. Renee and I lock eyes. For a moment, all the heated words and unspoken issues between us hang in the air. But as Amber looks between us, curiously, we reach a silent truce. For her sake, and for the sake of the day, we let it all slide in the background. Rather than dredging up further drama, Renee and I spend the rest of the ride giving Amber a crash course in Vietnamese language and culture. The entrance to my parents' house always brings a rush of nostalgia. The familiar scent of jasmine and the faded walls painted in a pale blue hue transport me back to a simpler time. Renee and I exchange a quick glance, our previous arguments momentarily shelved. For the next few hours, we are a happy couple. In my line of work, you get really good at pretending. Stepping out of the car, the sounds of laughter and the faint murmur of voices reach our ears. It seems the entire extended family has already gathered. I straighten my jackets while Renee adjusts her dress, making sure everything is in place. As we near the entrance, the door swings open to reveal my mother, a small, plump woman with graying hair pulled back in a tight bun. Her face lights up with a bright smile as she sees us.
Ah, Asher, Renee, you came.
She exclaims, her Vietnamese accent shades her English. My father, a tall, grizzled man with hands roughened from years in the fishing industry on the Gulf, appeared behind her, a wide smile on his face.
Chao Mung.
Welcome, he booms, pulling me into a bear hug.
It's good to see you, Mom and Dad, I say.
The words wrap over my tongue as comfortably as a well-worn coat. Renee steps forward with a shy smile.
Chukman namoy, Papa.
Happy New Year, Mom and Dad, she says, her accent thick, but her effort brings a broad smile to my mother's face. My mom smiles warmly.
Very good. Happy New Year, dear.
Dad comments. Better every year. Soon we won't know you're not Vietnamese. My mom's face tightens, a glare flashed at him for his potentially insensitive remark. Renee lets out a light, good-natured laugh, brushing off the comment with grace.
One day, perhaps, but until then, I'll keep practicing.
Mom reaches up to embrace Renee warmly. She then pulls back to inspect her, eyes full of warmth.
You look beautiful, Con,
she says, using the Vietnamese word for daughter, as though to reassure her of her place in the family.
Oh, this is Amber, by the way, our secretary at the agency.
I introduced Amber, breaking back into English. She waves, shyly, a small hello escaping her lips. I scan the room. The familiar hum of conversation and warm amber light embrace me. Older relatives sit on one side, their conversations a flowing river of lyrical Vietnamese. Their laughter, accompanying a game of Tien Lan, merges with a gentle clink of teacups. On the other side, my younger cousins chatter excitedly in English, their eyes glued to a smartphone as they share the latest online sensation. My gaze drifts to the wall, adorned with family photographs, moments of joy and milestones frozen in time, interspersed with stern portraits of me as a Marine. I'm drawn to the corner of the living room where the family altar stands. The soft glow of candles illuminates photographs of ancestors, their faces forever frozen in time. My eyes rest on the picture of my grandma, Kim, the woman who helped raise me. I take a joss stick, igniting it from the altar's candle. The fragrant smoke slowly curls upwards, filling the air with a comforting, woody aroma. It mingles seamlessly with the savory scent of my mom's cooking wafting from the kitchen. Bowing slightly, I say a silent prayer, thanking her for her love and guidance. Continuing my search, I catch sight of my younger sister, Kira, in the adjoining room. She's chasing after her two young children, a look of frantic merriment on her face. But amidst the giggles and playful shrieks of the kids, I notice the strain in their eyes. A shadow of sadness and uncertainty that she's doing her best to hide. The absence of Chuan, her husband, hangs in the air like a heavy, unspoken word. It's her first tete since their separation, and the pain is still fresh, a wound yet to heal. Navigating my way towards Kira feels like treading through a determined defense on the football field. I sidestep Aunt May's eager questions and slide past Uncle Bao's boisterous stories, finally reaching Kira. Kira's eyes met mine, and for a moment the mask falling, revealing the raw vulnerability beneath. She gives me a wary but sincere smile.
Hey, Anash,
Kira says, looking almost surprised to see me. She hugs me, clinging to me just a moment longer than usual, as if drawing strength from our bond. She then turns to Renee, offering a genuine smile and a hug.
Good to see you, Renee.
It's great to see you, Em,
I say. Her kids, Theo and Mia, 7 and 5 years old, notice us, their faces lighting up with youthful excitement.
Uncle Ash, Aunt Renee!
They scream, abandoning their game to rush towards us, their small feet pattering against the wooden floor. Renee bends down to the kids' level, feigning shock as she holds her hands out to measure their height.
You two are getting so tall. Soon, you'll be taller than me,
she exclaims with playful exaggeration. Theo giggles, puffing out his little chest with pride, while Mia, ever the dramatic one, stands on her tiptoes and stretches her arms skyward.
Look, Renee, I'm already so tall.
Kira chuckles, ruffling Mia's hair.
At this rate, she might just surpass all of us.
The kids jump onto me with squeals of delight, wrapping their little arms around me tightly. The joy in their eyes is infectious, and for a moment, the weight of the day's events melts away.
Ash,
Theo exclaims, his eyes twinkling with mischief.
Tell us a detective story. We want to be like you and Renee when we grow up.
Mia says, echoing her brother's enthusiasm. I look over at Renee, who smirks, a glint of amusement in her eyes. We agreed a long time ago that the real stories from our line of work aren't suitable for little ears. But it's Tad's, and I don't want to let the kids down.
All right, let's start. This is the story of brave Detective Thief.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store at Lowe's.com for details.
Theo and his brilliant young sister, Detective Mia.
Theo beams with pride while Mia snuggles closer, her eyes wide with anticipation.
When the story begins, I say, settling down on the living room floor with the kids clamoring around me.
Theo and Mia find themselves in the heart of a big, bustling city. The city was lively, filled with music and colors, but it held a great big secret. Theo's eyes are wide, and he whispers to Mia.
That's like New Orleans.
Mia nods eagerly, her eyes never leaving my face.
Yes, but you see, I continue. There was a naughty bunch in town, making trouble for local shop owners like Mr. Delgado, the nice baker, and Miss King, the sweet florist. They were taking their money and making them very sad.
Like bullies.
Mia interjects with a frown.
Exactly like bullies, Mia, Renee affirms with a gentle smile. But our private eyes knew that they should always stand up to bullies.
Theo whispers something into Mia's ear, and she giggles, covering her mouth with her hand. Renee takes over, her eyes dancing with mischief.
Now, the leader of these bullies was called the Viper, and just like his name, he was slippery and dangerous.
Mia's eyes widen with a mix of fear and excitement.
That's a scary name,
she whispers.
Yes, it is, I agree, nodding gravely. But our duo are never afraid. They're brave, like lions.
With the help of some friendly cats in the city, our detectives discovered that the Viper had a hideout. It was a secret place where they planned all their naughty schemes.
Like a pirate ship,
Theo suggests. Mia nods enthusiastically.
Or a spooky castle,
I chuckle. More like an old abandoned warehouse, but your ideas are way cooler. Renee nods.
Inside the warehouse, Theo and Mia found all sorts of evidence that the bullies had been up to no good.
The two detectives, using their clever skills, gathered all the evidence and took it straight to the police, I add. The police were very impressed with their work, and soon arrested the bullies, making sure they couldn't bother Mr. Delgado, Miss King, or any other shopkeepers again. Mia clapped her hands in delight.
Yay for Detective Theo and Detective Mia.
And you know what happened next? The shopkeepers were so grateful to the brave detectives that they threw a big party in their honor. They even gave them a special reward. Renee winks at me, her face bright with amusement, the tension from before seeming to melt. I pull out 2 small red envelopes from my pocket. Here's your reward, brave detectives, I say. Handing 1 envelope to each child. Theo and Mia hop from foot to foot in excitement, their young energy palpable. Kira gives them a stern but affectionate look.
Now, what do you say when someone gives you a gift?
The pair pause, glancing at each other as if to confirm their response. In unison, they bent their waist, performing a small bow.
Kam un kao ash, kam un ma rene,
they chorus, their Vietnamese impeccable. It's a clear sign of Kira's efforts to instill in them a connection to their roots.
You are very welcome, Renee responds.
The children's laughter fills the air as they dart away.
the envelopes clutched tightly in their hands, eager to share their treasures with their cousins. Kira watches them go, a tender smile playing on her lips, as the sound of their laughter fades into the background hum of conversation and clinking dishware. Her expression changes, the fatigue and melancholy creeping back into her face. She leans against the doorway, arms crossed loosely over her chest.
"You and Renee, you're really good with them,"
Kira murmurs, her voice soft. I offer a modest shrug, feeling the warmth of her words.
"They're great kids, Em."
If she only knew. The tale I'd spun for the kids was a sanitized version of the gritty reality. There really was a protection racket. The Viper was no fictional bully, but Vincent the Viper Marcello, a feared mafia capo. Renee and I had infiltrated his compound, swiping a hard drive teeming with evidence of his dirty dealings, including evidence linking him to at least 3 murders. I also deliberately left out the grisly part of the story, where we abducted one of Marcello's thugs and pistol-whipped him with the gun he'd used to threaten the shopkeepers until he gave away his boss's hideout. I gently touched her arm.
"So, how are you holding up?"
I ask in a soft voice, leaning closer, as to keep the conversation private amidst the bustle of the celebration. She offers a small, tight-lipped smile, a reflexive gesture that doesn't reach her eyes.
"Oh, you know, I'm doing..."
Her voice trails off, her gaze drifting to where her kids had disappeared.
"I'm managing."
"Do you want to talk about it?" I ask, gently.
"Not right now,"
she replies, her voice a whispered sigh. After dinner, with stomachs filled and hearts warmed by food and familial laughter, Renee and I made our way to the kitchen to help clean up. The counters are littered with dirty dishes, remnants of the sumptuous feast we all enjoyed. The sink's faucet runs in a steady stream as we rinse and stack the dishes for washing, working in comfortable silence as the sounds of the celebration continue in the other rooms. Kira slips into the kitchen, her expression soft.
"Renee, why don't you go join the others?"
she suggests.
"I heard they're starting karaoke in the living room."
Renee's eyebrows shoot up in surprise, a light laugh escaping her lips.
"Oh, I can't sing, especially not in Vietnamese,"
she protests. Kira smiles, drying her hands on a dish towel.
"They have English songs too, you know."
"You can keep Amber company," I say, nodding towards the living room, where I see Amber, who's had one too many beers, flirting unabashedly with my cousin Dan.
"She seems to be doing just fine,"
she observes, still hesitant.
"Come on, I'll take your place here. Besides,"
she says, casting a glance in my direction,
"I have a lot to catch up on with my big brother."
Before Renee could protest, other family members peek into the kitchen, echoing Kira's sentiments and whisking her away into the other room. With Renee now out of the kitchen and the hum of a familiar ballad emanating from the living room, Kira and I find ourselves surrounded by the relative quiet. The moment is disturbed by the rustle of plastic as Kira gestures to the bags of trash filling a corner of the room.
"Hey, can you help me take out the trash?"
I nod, grabbing a bag and following her out the back door. The night air is crisp and cool, a stark contrast to the warm bustle inside. The sky is painted with a million stars, and the distant chirping of crickets creates a quiet background rhythm. After we dump the trash bags into the bins, I noticed Kira's gaze drifting towards the backyard's far corner. It's where we used to have a secret hiding place as kids, a little nook in the hedge where we would discuss our greatest adventures and plans. The hedge has grown thick and wild, but the nook still seems to be there.
"Remember that place?"
Kira asks, her voice wistful.
"How could I forget?"
I reply, a hint of a smile playing on my lips. Walking over to the hedge, the crunch of the grass beneath our feet breaks the silence of the night. We stand before it, side by side, our breath visible in the cool night air.
A flood of memories rushes back.
All right, spill it, Kira,
I say in a low voice.
What was that cryptic text about?
She takes a deep breath, and in the glow of the stars, her eyes glisten with unshed tears.
I'm scared, Han,
she whispers. The vulnerability in her voice tugs at my heart, and I reach out, squeezing her hand reassuringly. What's going on? She hesitates, taking a moment to gather her thoughts before speaking.
It's about John. I'm worried. He's changed. I think he's involved in something dangerous, and I fear for his safety.
How do you know? I ask, trying to keep my voice steady. Her voice trembles as she recounts her recent encounter.
A few nights ago, I went to his apartment to pick up some things for the kids. I wasn't expecting him to be home, but he was there, with a woman.
I narrow my eyes, feeling a prickle of irritation. My mind jumps to conclusions. Kira, he's not your responsibility anymore. If he's seeing another woman, it's none of your Kira walls around to face me. Her eyes ablaze with frustration, cutting me off mid-sentence.
Ash, that's not it. Listen to me.
She takes a deep, shaky breath, and her voice drops to a whisper.
The woman, she was dressed in a long, dark robe, and her face was covered with some kind of ornate mask. They were standing in the living room, holding hands in a circle with other people in similar outfits.
I let out an audible sigh, brushing off her concerns.
It sounds like he's just involved with someone who's into new age shit.
Stop. Just stop. It's not what you think.
She insists, desperation threading her voice. She fumbles with her phone, her fingers trembling as she quickly navigates to her gallery. She thrusts the device into my hands, the video cued on the screen.
Watch this.
I press play, and the video opens with a shaky view of Chuan's apartment from the partially obscured doorway, probably taken while Kira was hiding. The ambience is dim, only illuminated by the gentle flicker of countless candles, casting eerie, dancing shadows on the walls. In the middle of the room, Chuan stands surrounded by a group of similarly masked individuals. Their robes are not just dark, they seem to absorb the light around them, as if they are made from the very fabric of the void. The chanting begins softly, almost drowned out by the waxing and waning of the wind outside, but it quickly escalates, growing louder and more frantic. Suddenly, a dark mass starts to form in the middle of the circle. It doesn't make any logical sense. It's as if the very fabric of reality is tearing apart. This inky blackness writhes and pulsates, taking on an almost liquid form before solidifying into a shapeless, hulking mass. The mass seems to shimmer and undulate, as if it's not completely of this dimension. And its presence feels oppressive, as though it's emanating a force that threatens to crush everything in its wake. The masked figures, including Chuan, begin to levitate, drawn towards this entity, as if caught in its gravitational pull. Whispers echo around the room, not from the people present, but from the entity itself. It speaks in a multitude of voices, a cacophonous symphony of tones and pitches, the language indescribable and unlike anything of this earth. The voices grow louder, building to a deafening crescendo, before everything suddenly goes quiet. The abrupt silence is stifling. The creature, a maelstrom of shadows and whispers, speaks again, this time in English. The voice is a myriad of tones intertwined, reverberating in chilling harmony, like the sound of an ancient cosmic bell.
Spheres align. 3 days. The passageway will unfurl.
It intones. Then, as if sensing an outside presence, the entity starts to turn slowly. Its amorphous form constantly shifting as if trying to find a face within its depths. Just as it seems to lock onto the camera's location, the video ends abruptly, the screen going black. I stare at the phone in my hands, my heart racing, in my mind struggling to process what I've just witnessed. I looked up at Kira, trying to gauge her reaction.
"That's all I could capture without being seen,"
she whispers, her voice quivering with terror.
"I left as quickly and quietly as I could."
I replay the video, hoping to catch some indication that what I've just witnessed was some kind of elaborate trick or hoax. With each playback, I try to dissect every frame, every pixel, looking for a flaw or telltale sign of special effects or CGI, but nothing seems amiss. It's probably just some kind of art project or practical effects, you know? Maybe augmented reality or something, I say, attempting to sound more convinced than I feel. Kira's eyes plead with me, her expression fraught with worry.
"You know that isn't true, Ash. I've never seen anything like that. There was something malevolent about it."
I don't know what's going on with them, but this is way beyond our understanding," I reply, frustration evident in my voice. She steps closer, her voice taking on an urgent tone.
"Please, Ash, I don't care if..."
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
"We can't explain it. I just want to know he's okay."
I grit my teeth, clenching my fists. "Why do you still care? After everything?" Her eyes glisten, and she looks away for a moment before meeting my gaze.
"He might have hurt me, but he's still the father of my children. I have to know he's safe. For the kids."
The memories flood back in a tidal wave. The last time I saw anything close to the fear I see in Kira's eyes right now was years ago, during her college days. She'd come home with a black eye, attempting to hide it behind oversized sunglasses and hastily applying makeup. I remember the white-hot rage that had boiled within me. We didn't need words. I knew exactly who had done it. That evening, her then-boyfriend learned the hard way that no one hurt my little sister and got away with it. Taking a deep breath, I met Kira's gaze, the weight of the situation settling in. "Okay, I relent. I'll help, but we do this carefully and intelligently." She grips my arm, her touch filled with gratitude and desperation.
"Thank you, Anne, but you have to promise not to tell Renee about this."
"Why not? Is it because she's not yet?" I ask, my voice tinged with a hint of irritation. The question instantly sets a spark in Kira's eyes.
"How dare you ask me that?"
she retorts, offended.
"I love Renee like a sister. It's not about that. I can't have anyone know, not even Mom and Dad. Please, this stays between us."
I nod, keeping the storm of thoughts at bay for a moment, as I agree to Kira's condition. My heart thuds against my chest, mirroring the pounding rhythm of a war drum. We're interrupted by a sudden rustling and a beam of light illuminating the hedges, turning the leaves a vivid, almost otherworldly green. Renee steps into view, her brows knitted in confusion.
"What are you two doing in the bushes?"
We stand, realizing that the childhood nook doesn't conceal us like it used to. The growth spurts over the years have rendered the hiding spots ineffective. We tower over the hedge.
Just reminiscing about old times?
Geeta says quickly, her voice strained yet stable. The vulnerability from moments ago has receded behind a mask of normalcy. Renee eyes us skeptically, but shakes her head with a playful smile.
Well, I just did a rendition of Billie Jean. Let's just say MJ's probably turning in his grave.
She says, brandishing a microphone like a trophy.
Your turn to suffer, my love.
I take the mic from Renee, my hand brushing against hers. Her skin is warm and comforting, a stark contrast to the chill that has settled deep within my bones.
You set the bar so high.
I tease with a forced laugh, trying to make light of the situation.
I don't know how I can compete with the Cajun Queen.
Renee laughs.
Oh, just wait till you see me moonwalk.
She teases, her eyes twinkling. As we walk back towards the laughter and light of the living room, Geeta's gaze finds mine. A silent plea reflected in her eyes, reinforcing the pact of secrecy between us. I gave her a subtle nod, a promise shrouded in dread and uncertainty. Part 2. The Stakeout. The morning sun filters through the shutters of our office in the French Quarter, casting long, dappled shadows on the worn wooden floor. The faint hum of jazz from a nearby club and the distant chatter of tourists lend a semblance of normalcy to the room. Yet, that normalcy is tainted with tension. Renee and I had another spat this morning over how she rearranged the office supplies. Something about her needing this space on the desk for personal matters, which she didn't clarify. But these days, it feels like those little annoyances are the only constants in our relationship. The lighthearted teasing and warmth we shared last night at the Tet's dinner feels like a distant dream. The return of our day-to-day life brings the same petty, inconsequential bullshit arguments back on the menu. A heavy sigh escapes my lips. Is this the new norm? The desktop pings, bringing me back to the present. The background report I requested on Chuan is in. A quick skim reveals no major red flags. Mostly details about his life I know already. He's an accomplished quantum physicist, respected in his field, and a prominent lecturer at Tulane. No arrest record. Another detail surfaces that tugs at a personal chord within me. Chuan came to America as a refugee at the tender age of 6. His family were boat people, escaping the aftermath of the Vietnam War. My own parents were boat people. I've grown up listening to their stories, feeling their silent pain, the horrors Chuan must have witnessed. I can't even begin to imagine what that does to a person's soul. One random detail does catch my eye, though. He's a member of some sort of academic organization, full of leading scientists and engineers. Nexus Consortium. The name sounds innocuous enough, but my gut tells me it's worth digging deeper. I shut down the computer, and just as I'm getting up, Renee looks over, her eyebrow raised in that inquisitive manner I've grown fond of.
Where are you off to in such a hurry?
Clearing my throat, I craft a believable excuse on the spot.
Got a lead on the Landry case. I need to head over to Algiers. Might take me most of the day.
She narrows her eyes.
Want some company? The more the merrier.
Don't you need to go over the forensics for the Thibodeau break-in? The evidence bag with the lock?
I remind her, hoping she won't push it further. A thoughtful expression crosses her face.
Oh, right.
She murmurs, her gaze drifting towards the large file on her desk. Guilt gnaws at me. I hate lying to her, especially when it feels like the walls between us are growing taller every day.
Hey,
I began, my voice softer.
Sorry about earlier, about the whole desk thing.
She offers me a small smile, her gray eyes locking onto mine.
It's okay. I overreacted. I've been needing space lately.
I chuckle. You always have your quirks. She smiles, the hint of mischief back in her eyes.
Speaking of which, can you get me a banh mi with extra pickled daikon and jalapenos while you're out?
I raise an eyebrow at the oddly specific request, but agree with a light laugh. Craving the heat, huh? I tease, not suspecting the deeper undercurrents of her desires.
Yes, and make it snappy, Detective Tran,
she says with a playful wink, the momentary thaw in our chilly morning interaction bringing a fleeting comfort. Her eyes searched mine, but I held her gaze steadily.
Oh, and one last thing.
What is it? I ask, already heading to the door.
Just be careful, okay?
She says, with a touch of sadness in her voice. I always am, I replied, leaning over to press a quick kiss to her cheek. Before leaving the office, I take a few extra precautions. I put my phone on airplane mode to prevent any location tracking and use a burner phone. I also decide to take the back roads, avoiding the main streets where I may run into someone we know. The drive is nerve-wracking, my mind oscillating between worries about Chuan and guilt about deceiving Renee. I try to focus on the investigation at hand. My first stop is Chuan's apartment. As I park my car a block away from Chuan's uptown apartment complex, my burner phone buzzes with a new text message. It's from Kita. I gave her this number just in case we need to keep in contact.
Stay safe, hon.
My fingers hesitate over the keys, searching for the right words. Finally, I type back. I will. I promise. Simple, but to the point. As the late morning sun casts its glint over the picturesque uptown apartments, I spot Chuan stepping out of the complex. He's dressed casually, his attire suggesting nothing out of the ordinary. Still, the unease from last night's video hasn't left me. I gave him a head start before starting my car, making sure I don't draw any attention. He makes his way to a nearby coffee shop, and I park a little further down, choosing to watch from a distance. After ordering what seems to be his regular morning coffee fix, he leaves, seemingly lost in his thoughts. Throughout the day, I shadow Chuan from one location to another, always maintaining a discreet distance. There's a predictability to his movements. A local market, the university, a gym, and then a bookstore. On the surface, everything appears perfectly normal. But with every passing hour, I can't shake the feeling that something's off. Almost as if he's masking something beneath the mundane. While Chuan is in a diner grabbing lunch, I take the opportunity to make some notes on the day's observations. Distracted, I barely register the soft knocking on my car window until it becomes more insistent. Startled, I look up, my heart sinking when I see Renee's face, her eyes flashing with a mix of confusion and anger.
You fucking asshole.
She spits. Her voice is sharp, unyielding. She only brings out the R-rated French when she's really mad. My mind races, scrambling to assemble a plausible excuse. I stutter, failing to form a coherent sentence. She opens the car door, her eyes scanning the dashboard cluttered with notes and the map highlighting Chuan's routines.
Why are you surveying your ex-brother-in-law? Are you out of your fucking mind?
How did you... I began to ask.
The burner phone, Ash.
She interrupts, exasperation tinting her voice.
You left the box in your trash bin. I checked with Abby. You're not working on the Landry case. Also, you left your email logged in. I saw the background check you requested on Chuan.
My face flashed with a mix of embarrassment and frustration. I was careless, made rookie mistakes. The first was believing that I could outwit a former NOPD detective who knows me better than anyone. She slides into the passenger seat, her presence filling the confined space, making it feel even smaller. The weight of her disappointment anchors me to the seat, a visceral reminder of the rift between us. My initial instinct is to salvage the situation with more lies, but the look in her eyes stops me. She deserves the truth. I try to lighten the blow, a weak attempt to assuage the growing tempest in the car. Look, Renee, I mutter, reaching into the back seat and holding up a paper bag. I got you banh mi, just the way you like it. The gesture is pathetic and insufficient for the weight of the situation, but it's all I have. She stares at the bag. Her features hardens, but flickers of hunger pass in her eyes.
Did you get it the way I wanted?
She asks in a controlled voice, maintaining the storm within. I nod. Extra pickled daikon and jalapenos. She still looks beyond pissed, but snatches the bag from my hand with a resigned sigh.
You have until I finish this sandwich to explain yourself.
I nod, watching as she unwraps the sandwich. She takes a bite, never taking her eyes off me. I feel like I'm under a microscope, about to be dissected. Kira asked me to check on Chuan, I admit.
So, you're spying for your sister now?
She shoots back.
Let me guess, she thinks he's seeing another woman.
I can't help but let out a soft chuckle. Even in the seriousness of the moment, we had both jumped to the same initial conclusion. Great minds. No, nothing like that. She's genuinely worried about him, I insist. I reach over and grab the tablet from the glove compartment, hitting play on the hidden phone video Kira captured of Chuan. Renee's eyes widen as the video plays, the sandwich in her hand momentarily forgotten, as the screen is filled with the pulsating and shimmering form of the Eldritch Horror. The banh mi slips from her grasp, splattering condiments on the dashboard and floor.
Holy Mother of God,
she whispers, her voice trembling. The stern, controlled demeanor she held just moments ago shatters. She turns to me, her face pale, her voice trembling.
What the hell is that, Ash? How can something like that even exist?
I look down, the weight of my decisions weighing heavily on my shoulders. I don't know, but that's why Kira is worried about Chuan. If she thinks he's gotten himself involved in something otherworldly.
You think?
Renee's voice rises in disbelief and fear.
And you thought you'd face this alone, without telling me?
My mouth goes dry. I'd anticipated the backlash from my earlier lie, but facing her raw emotions now, it felt different. Kira made me promise not to tell you. I mutter, ashamed of my excuse. Renee's eyes darken.
She did what?
Kira didn't want to involve you, I explain, my voice barely audible as the guilt churns within me. She wanted to keep it between me and her.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The reality of my choices is like salt in an open wound. I can see the hurt in Renee's eyes, layered with fear and anger. This isn't the kind of relationship we've built. We are partners in every sense of the word. We're supposed to carry burdens together. Yet, here I am, dropping the weight of the universe into her, unprepared and unannounced. Just as Renee is about to respond, her eyes flicker to something outside. The words freeze on her lips, and her gaze hardens as she intently looks out of the window. I follow her gaze, my heart immediately lurching into my throat. Through the diner window, we see someone slide into the booth next to Chuan. A woman with striking platinum blonde hair, dressed in a crisp, tailored suit. The intensity of her pale blue eyes even visible from this distance. There's an elegance about her, but it's cold, calculated, and she holds herself with an authority that seems almost uncanny. My hand darts to the glove compartment, pulling out the laser microphone we'd used in countless past investigations. The contraption looks like a binocular, but it's specifically designed to pick up vibrations from glass panes, allowing eavesdropping from a distance.
pointing the device towards the diner window. I adjust the frequency, trying to tune in to the conversation inside. Renee looks at me with wide eyes, aware of the gravity of the situation.
"What are they saying?"
she whispers. I hand one of the earbuds to Renee, and she hastily inserts it into her ear. We can just make out snippets of the conversation inside the diner. The audio is not perfect, the ambient noise from the streets making it harder to discern the words, but we hold our breath, straining to listen. A crystal clear voice breaks to the ambient noise.
"Dr. Lee, I trust the preparations for the Void Whisperer are on schedule."
The woman's tone is refined with a clipped British accent, a stark contrast to the rustic diner setting. Tron's response comes through muffled.
"Yes, Miss Lockhart. Everything is prepared. In 2 days, the world will know of Lord Dan."
My mind races at the mention of the ominous name. Lord Dan. The Black Fire. What is Tron getting himself into? What is the Void Whisperer? Both Renee and I lean in, as if physically getting closer would somehow make the fractured conversation clearer through the earpiece. The woman's voice is calm, but there's a steely undertone that sends shivers down my spine.
"His flames will bathe the world in darkness, and from the ashes, a new era will rise."
Miss Lockhart's words come through the earpiece, a mix of fervor and devotion in her voice. Renee and I exchange worried glances.
"Is this some kind of cult?"
she whispers, her voice quivering. The concern in her eyes mirrors my own. The conversation continues, fragments of words and phrases filtering through the static interference of the earpiece. Tron's voice comes through again, sounding almost distorted and unsettlingly distant.
"I'm not sure."
Tron's voice trembles through the earpiece, the uncertainty clear.
"Is there no other way?" "There is no room for doubt, brother. We are the harbingers of a new era. Each one of us must be willing to sacrifice everything on the altar of the dark flame."
She urges, her tone chillingly gentle.
"Sacrifice?"
Renee mouths silently to me, a line of worry etching her features. The questions multiply in my mind, each one more disturbing than the last. There's a pause, and the muffled sound of Tron's deep, shuddering breath filters through the ambient noise.
"I understand, Miss Lockhart,"
he concedes, a hint of despair in his voice.
"Nothing can stand in our way. I apologize for my moment of doubt."
The conversation between Tron and Lockhart continues, but their words become harder to discern. They talk in hushed tones, whispering about arrangements, people and places, and a device capable of breaching barriers beyond human comprehension. It's a puzzle, each piece more intricate and confusing than the last. We see the pair lock hands across the dinner table. Their grip on each other is firm, their fingers intertwining, as though they were a couple in an intimate embrace. They shut their eyes in unison, their brows furrowing in intense concentration. Just then, the scene inside the diner blurs for a split second, as if distorted by a sudden heat wave. In that fleeting moment, a terrifying vision replaces the mundane backdrop. Lockhart transforms, her human visage giving way to a skeletal figure shrouded in ethereal darkness, whispers of shadows swirling around her. Tron's face is now marked with strange, arcane symbols, glowing a harsh, luminescent blue against his skin. The once buzzing diner is filled with spectral figures, their twisted forms locked in eternal agony. The world snaps back to normal as swiftly as it changed, leaving me gasping for breath, gripping the car's interior for support. Renee's face is white as a sheet.
"Did you see that?"
I feel her hand clutch mine, her grip tight with fear and anticipation.
"You saw it too,"
I reply, my heart pounding against my chest like a frantic drum. The silence in the car is heavy as we watch Tron and Lockhart leave the diner. They go their separate ways. A casual observer would think nothing of the meeting, but we know differently.
we stumbled into a web far more intricate and dangerous than we could ever imagine. There's no turning back now. Part 3. Stardust. Renee and I watch as Tron and Lockhart exit the diner. They exchange a brief nod, the weight of their conversation evident in their gestures. Lockhart heads towards a sleek, black sedan, while Tron moves in the opposite direction.
"We can't tail both,"
Renee murmurs, her eyes darting between the two. I drum my fingers on the steering wheel, contemplating the decision.
"It isn't a cheap horror movie. We're not splitting up."
Renee smirks, though her face remains tense.
"Who do we follow?"
I take a moment to consider our options. Lockhart, while intriguing, is an unknown variable. On the other hand, based on his conversation with her, Tron sounds like he's planning something imminent. The urgency in his voice, the sense of purpose, it all points to immediate action. "We'll stick to Tron," I decide hurriedly, my voice low.
"But we can't just let her go. She's..." I falter,
struggling to articulate the unnerving encounter we'd just witnessed.
"A piece of the puzzle we can't afford to ignore,"
Renee finishes for me, her voice steady despite the lingering fear in her eyes. Renee's eyes dart to Lockhart, watching her walk towards a sleek, dark-tinted vehicle.
"You still have that tracker from the Landry case?"
she asks, already formulating a plan in her head. "I do." I retrieve a small, coin-sized tracking device from the glove compartment.
"But how do you plan on planting it?"
She smirks, mischief dancing in her eyes despite the weight of the situation.
"We're in Uptown. It's a bright day, and there are couples strolling everywhere. We'll blend in."
Using the crowd to our advantage, we exit the car and meander towards Lockhart's vehicle. Renee takes the lead, her arm casually looped around mine. To any onlooker, or just a couple out for a leisurely walk. As we near Lockhart's sleek sedan, Renee leans into me, her head resting gently on my shoulder, her fingers subtly brushing the underside of the car. It's done, so seamlessly that even with my knowledge of her intentions, I barely register the moment she affixes the tracker. We've barely taken 10 steps away from the vehicle when Lockhart's voice cuts through the ambient street noise.
"You there?"
All of our hearts freeze, and a cold sweat forms at the base of my neck. We turn around slowly, preparing to face the consequences of our daring act. The icy blue eyes of Miss Lockhart bore into us, and there's an unsettling glint in her gaze.
"You drop this,"
she says, holding up Renee's delicate indigo scarf, which must have slipped from her neck during our ruse.
"Oh my God, thank you so much,"
Renee quickly replies, feigning a thick New York accent, her voice filled with exaggerated gratitude.
"I'd hate to come back from vacation and find out I lost it."
I quickly catch on, and chiming in, I add,
"Thanks, ma'am. Always losing something, this one. Can't take her anywhere."
My voice is thick with the Bronx twang, striving to mask any recognizable traits of my true voice. Lockhart's penetrating gaze lingers on us for a few unnerving moments, trying to discern any hint of deception. But then, with a subtle tilt of her head, she offers a polite nod.
"You're welcome,"
she replies, her accent dripping with British formality. With one last glance, she enters her vehicle and drives off. As we watch the car disappear into the distance, we exhale simultaneously, the weight of the moment pressing heavily upon us.
"That was close," I whisper.
Renee smirks, twirling the scarf around her fingers.
"Never a dull moment with you, Cher."
As we return to our car, I key the ignition, and with a glance at Renee, we set off, trailing Chuan's older model sedan. The route is winding and filled with unexpected turns, leading us away from the bustling neighborhoods of New Orleans and toward the industrial outskirts. Renee keeps a keen eye on the surroundings, while I maintain a discreet distance behind Chuan. Soon, we find ourselves near the mouth of the Mississippi River, where dilapidated warehouses and rusting factories paint a bleak image of an industry long forgotten. Chuan's car slowly and eventually parks near an old factory, seemingly abandoned. The factory, a mammoth structure made of old red bricks, is imprinted with faded lettering spelling out Creole Cotton Mills, hinting at its former glory days. Towering chimneys stretch upwards, and large windows, some broken, punctuate the building. we park a few blocks away to avoid being spotted, making our way on foot. The heavy scent of the Mississippi fills the air, mixed with a faint, metallic odor that I can't quite place. "We need to get a closer look," I whisper, pointing towards a side entrance. We made our way stealthily, avoiding the scarce light from the lampposts. We approach the side entrance, but it's locked and appears to be reinforced. Given the noise that breaking it down would make, it's not a viable option. I scan the surrounding area, and my eyes catch a broken window on the upper floor, large enough for someone to crawl through, but high enough to be a challenge. Using a discarded wooden crate, we manage to boost ourselves up. I take the lead, carefully pulling myself up and through the shattered window. A few jagged edges scratch my forearm, but I manage to land softly on the other side. Reaching down, I extend my hands to help pull Renee up. Within moments, we're both inside, concealed in the shadows of the abandoned factory. The ambience inside the factory is heavy, with years of stagnation and decay palpable in the air. The cavernous space is filled with the silhouettes of old rusting machines, remnants of a bygone era. I take a moment to adjust to the dim lighting, the soft glow of the moon filtering through broken windows, providing minimal illumination. Patting my jacket pocket, I take comfort in feeling the solid weight of my concealed carry against my side. With potential dangers unknown, it's a small but significant reassurance. Renee gestures toward the center of the factory. From our vantage point, we can see strange symbols drawn on the floor, encircling a raised platform. Tools, wires, and strange pieces of machinery are strewn about. This isn't a random gathering of discarded junk. Someone had been working here, crafting something large and intricate. We made our way towards the far end of the factory. There, we spot deep tire tracks, suggesting that something massive was recently moved from this location. Following the tracks, they lead towards large, reinforced doors that open out towards the river. Curiosity piqued, we carefully move closer. Upon inspection, the doors show recent signs of activity, with fresh scuff marks and faint residues of a luminescent substance smeared on the edges. I kneel, examining the tracks more closely. These aren't just any tracks. I look at the weight distribution. Whatever was moved from here, it was colossal, and it wasn't standard machinery. The remnants of a hasty operation are strewn everywhere. Scattered amongst the old factory machinery are smashed electronics and shards of devices that were purposefully destroyed. Piles of ash dot the ground, suggesting the recent burning of documents. I approach one such pile, sifting through the charred remnants with a gloved hand. Among the discarded blueprints and charred remains of paper, a glint catches my eye. I carefully brush aside the ash, picking up a half-burned photograph, the edges blackened and brittle to the touch. The image is clear in the center, revealing a younger Kira standing next to Chuan. They are not alone. Several others stand beside them, all cloaked in long, dark robes, their faces shadowed by the fabric. Renee comes over, looking over my shoulder. Her sharp intake of breath is audible in the
brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The otherwise quiet factory.
Is that...
She trails off, not needing to finish her sentence. It's Kira. I whisper, the weight of realization crushing down on me. My fingers trace over her face. She looks so young here, way before the kids were born. I think to myself, comparing the youthful face in the photograph with the Kira I know now. Renee gently takes the photograph from me, flipping it over. The handwriting, so familiar, reads, "To new beginnings, KT." My mind races. KT, Kira Tran. What has she gotten herself involved in? The dots start connecting, painting a picture I'm not sure I'm ready to comprehend. The muffled hum of conversation reaches our ears, forcing Renee and I to look up from the photograph. The rustling sound grows steadily louder, and instinctively we move further into the shadows. We carefully inch our way towards the source of the disturbance, keeping an eye out for any movement. The machinery, covered in layers of dust and cobwebs, serves as an effective shield, allowing us a clear view of the unfolding scene. As we reach the factory's loading dock, we see Chuan standing near the loading dock, surrounded by half a dozen figures, their bodies adorned with the same arcane symbols that marked Chuan's face in the diner vision. Their dark robes swish quietly, and the air seems to throb with a palpable energy, thick and foreboding. Lying prostrate on the ground, bound and gagged, is a young man, his face marked by terror. A smashed GoPro camera lies nearby, its light flickering erratically. "He was snooping around," one of the armed men growls, a hint of amusement in his voice.
"I was just exploring."
The young man pleads, his voice muffled by the gag. Urban explorers have become a phenomenon in recent years, thrill seekers searching for the next abandoned location to document and share with the world. This one unknowingly wandered into a den of vipers. Chuan glances at the bound man, his face devoid of any emotion. The captive's eyes dart around, pleading for mercy, but the chilling indifference in Chuan's gaze offers no hope.
"Please, I didn't see anything, I swear."
The captive sobs. Chuan kneels down, bringing his face inches from the terrified man. "Your fate was sealed the moment you stepped foot here," he says. His voice has a hint of empathy. "But take solace, young one. In death, you shall contribute to the coming of Lua Den." Before any of us could fully process Chuan's cryptic words, one of the armed apostles steps forward, holding a syringe filled with a shimmering fluorescent liquid. Its glow seems otherworldly, pulsing as if alive. Without hesitation, Chuan takes the needle and thrusts it into the young man's arm, emptying the contents into his bloodstream. A guttural scream tears from his throat, resonating with pure agony. His body convulses violently, the light from the liquid spreading, turning his veins a ghostly blue. Every instinct in my body screams to lunge forward, to do something, anything to save the man from the agonizing fate he's been subjected to. But a firm grip on my arm stops me. It's Renee. Her eyes, usually filled with a fiery determination, are filled with uncharacteristic fear. Her terrified eyes seem to say, "We can't take them all. Not here. Not now." I watched, paralyzed with horror, as the poor soul's body begins a terrifying metamorphosis. His skin turns translucent, each cell pulsating and shifting as if it's being reorganized by the fluorescent substance. His eyes cloud over, becoming milky white orbs devoid of any semblance of humanity. He thrashes violently on the ground for what feels like an eternity. His screams become more inhuman and distorted with every passing second. Then, as abruptly as it began, it stops. The man's writhing body goes limp, his once human form now a rapidly disintegrating mass of shifting, undulating cosmic energy. It's as if the very fabric of his being is torn apart and resembled into something beyond our comprehension. The sight is both captivating and horrifying. A swirling vortex of stars, galaxies, and nebulae takes shape where the man once lay. A gateway to the unknown. A window to the very depths of the universe. And then, as if sucked into a black hole, the shimmering portal collapses in on itself, leaving behind nothing but a few shimmering particles, like stardust. As the mist dissipates, Tron calmly steps forward, holding a small vial. With a soft motion, he captures a portion of the lingering mist, sealing it away. The contained essence swirls and pulsates with the same haunting luminescence. "A dark flame awaits," Tron murmurs, holding up the vial to inspect its contents. You watch in horror as he adds it to a case containing dozens of small vials, each pulsating at a different rate, like a chilling chorus. Their ethereal glow paints Chuan in a spectral light. The grim realization hits me. The vials represent a life taken, a soul stolen. Without wasting any more time, the group moves swiftly towards the riverbank. A motorboat, equipped with high-powered engines, waits for them. Chuan boards first, followed by his armed entourage, the boat's engines roaring to life. As the boat speeds away, leaving only the disrupted water in its wake, Renee and I remain paralyzed, struggling to comprehend the nightmare we've just witnessed. The air is thick with a sensation that's hard to describe. A mix of dread, sorrow, and the unmistakable feeling of being watched by something ancient. Something beyond comprehension.
Thank you for listening and delving with me into the dark together.
Please remember to leave a thumbs up and subscribe if you feel so inclined. The more engagement this video gets, the more YouTube will push my content to others.
Thus, the following will grow.
All stories read in this channel will be available on Spotify, iTunes, and just about everywhere else. Links in the description.
Thank you for listening and feeding the cause. We'll be seeing you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.